Touch you twice. Oh. 103.1 FM.
Thank you.
103.1 FM.
This week on Viewpoints.
Attribution science allows you to make this connection between carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and real-world impacts in terms of changes in weather patterns and other impacts.
We dive into a crash course on this emerging field. Then,
as a scientist, when you see something that doesn't fit your picture, that's the most exciting thing, because it's usually the thing that doesn't fit that is the clue to the next big breakthrough.
Scientific anomalies with the potential to improve our lives. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Taco Bell just dropped the new Cravings Value Menu. Now you can get 10 items for $3 or less, which means you can get the food you want for the price you want. It's almost like you can have your cake and eat it too. But in this case, it's a double stack taco from the new Cravings Value Menu. So basically, you can have your double stack taco and eat it too, which is a lot crunchier than cake. The new Cravings Value Menu is here. Get it at Taco Bell today. At participating U.S. Taco Bell locations while supplies last. Contact store for price and participation which vary. Tax extra.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Why are certain providers and medical doctors not listening to family members who have lived through a disease path for such a long time?
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
From powerful storms ripping through Texas to a greater number of tornadoes touching down across the Midwest, these are just a couple out of the many extreme weather occurrences that have happened over the last few months. While some may label these incidents as freak occurrences, others are hoping to find a deeper explanation by analyzing decades of observational data on weather patterns and severe weather systems. Many of these researchers are attribution scientists, a growing specialty that looks at whether and to what extent man-made climate change has contributed to the intensity or frequency of an extreme weather event.
So you're able to go into, for example, a heat wave and say how much more likely that heat wave was because of carbon pollution in the atmosphere. You're able to go into things like, you know, maybe a big rainfall event and say how much more precipitation was added by the fact that, you know, we've put a huge amount of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
That's Andrew Pershing, the Vice President for Science at Climate Central. Pershing believes attribution science can help the public better understand how extreme weather, like heat waves, wildfires, and hurricanes, are caused or influenced by global warming. So, how exactly are these measurements calculated?
Most attribution studies are going to rely on both long-term observations and climate models, climate projections. And each of those tells you something sort of different, and then you try to bring them together. So your long-term observations will allow you to figure out, like, how sensitive is this particular part of the planet, this particular process, to a change in the global mean temperature. The climate models allow you to do something very specific, where you can actually model the world if we hadn't put all of this extra CO2 and methane and all of the things that contribute to global warming. And you can play out what a planet would look like without those factors. And then you can do this very direct comparison between the occurrence or the frequency or the intensity of the process that you're studying in the current world versus this hypothetical counterfactual world where humans hadn't invented global warming.
Jump back to 2021, and Viewpoints did a story about attribution science, but a lot has changed since then. There have been many advances in data processing technology, and scientists now have a better grasp of emerging focuses and challenges within the field. And it's not just an important tool for scientists and climate policy experts, but it's also being used to help individuals and countries affected by climate-related disasters. For years, plaintiffs in these legal cases were missing the evidence needed to prove that human-induced climate change worsened extreme weather outcomes. While these cases are now more common in the U.S. and Europe, Pershing highlights how some places, especially third world or developing countries, are unable to prove this connection. This is important because it's often these places who lack the infrastructure and resources to best cushion themselves against climate change. As a result, they're disproportionately affected, even though they've historically contributed the least to carbon dioxide emissions.
I had a really interesting conversation with a colleague from Africa a few years ago about this, about, you know, the loss and damage issues. And her concern was in some ways the opposite, that you could have a situation where you only could make damage claims if you had an attribution study and had, you know, very concrete quantitative attribution. And her worry was that a lot of countries in Africa and other places around the world don't have good long-term data sets like we do in the US and Canada and Europe. And if you don't have that long-term data, it's very hard to do the attribution work. And so the challenge is, like, there are many more impacts on the world than there are impacts where we're going to actually be able to go in and put and do these calculations on.
In addition, there are also some extreme weather events that are much harder to study. Take tornadoes. Scientists don't have enough long-term data mapping tornadoes' frequency and severity. Without this information, it's difficult to create simulation models on how today's tornadoes compare to those of the past. The same can be said about hurricanes. However, there's more to work off of when studying this phenomenon.
In many ways, hurricanes have the same data problems that we've been talking about, because we only have really good hurricane data back to the 70s when we started observing the Earth with satellites. Because in the past, you would have, before that, you would have hurricanes that were out to sea and nobody knew they were there. So the hurricane statistics are not fantastic, but we know the physics behind hurricanes really, really well. And so you can actually do really good attribution for hurricanes using ocean temperature as the driver. And so you look at the attributable change in the ocean temperature and then project that into how much stronger the storm would be.
What attribution scientists can study really well are events like heat waves, drought, and wildfires. Research from the National Academy of Sciences shows that last year, climate change doubled the area burned by wildfires in the western part of the U.S. In late May, scientists at Climate Central analyzed a deadly heat wave that hit Florida for several days.
Where we were looking at the temperature forecast in Florida and seeing temperatures that are, you know, 10, 15 degrees Fahrenheit above what you would expect this time of year, just really getting to, in some cases, temperatures that you don't expect in Florida. I think there was a high of 116 degrees. We were able to go in with some of our tools and we could say that those temperatures are at minimum five times more likely because of climate change. And so this is an event that would be very hard to imagine in a world that didn't have climate change. And part of the reason we're able to do that is because it's temperature, which temperature we have really good data, we have really good forecasts, and we have really good climate projections.
Another important point is that attribution science can also help experts understand when climate change wasn't a strong contributing factor in a natural disaster. This was the case in the devastating Maui wildfires that happened last August.
It was very much kind of an ordinary level of dryness, ordinary level of temperature. There, it was much more about land use, around vegetation, and around the ignition associated with the electrical grid.
From wildfires to hurricanes to extreme heat, each cost billions of dollars every year and lead to countless deaths. Attribution science has the ability to help people better visualize the real-time effects of climate change and the continuing consequences if we stay on this course. Looking ahead, the field will only improve as more data pours in and technology improves. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Andrew Pershing, head to viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, the mysterious anomalies of the universe when Viewpoints returns.
Progressive presents Good News, Bad News, Dumb News, then Great News. Good news. A letter in your mailbox says you could save money bundling your home and auto insurance with Progressive. Bad news. You saw it after your teenager backed the car into the mailbox. Dumb news. A new mailbox, basically a box on a stick, costs up to $400. Great news.
You decide to see if you could save money bundling at progressive.com and go with paperless mail instead. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers not available in all states.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Certainly, we all want to see suicide prevention, and I'm certain that it does work to a degree. It's when I hear that all suicides are preventable that it makes me bristle, because they are not.
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
What's that sound? That's the sound of Downy Unstoppable scent beads going into your washing machine and giving your clothes freshness that lasts all day long. There it is again. It's like music to your ears, or more like music to your nose. That freshness is irresistible. Let's get a Downy Unstoppables bottle shake. And now a sniff solo. Nice. Get six times longer lasting freshness plus odor protection with Downy Unstoppables in wash scent beads.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
You know when a child constantly asks the question, why, after every answer? Maddening, right? Particle physicist Harry Cliff admits he was probably that kind of kid.
You kind of end up either a physicist or a cosmologist. And so that's the kind of mentality, I think. It's that kind of curiosity about the world. And I think I was one of those kids who was probably exhausted my parents by continually asking questions.
Today, Cliff is based at the University of Cambridge, where he works on the Large Hadron Collider. He's also the author of Space Oddities, the Mysterious Anomalies Challenging Our Understanding of the Universe.
Particle physics is really about the most basic building blocks of the world. So essentially, deep, deep down, what is the world around us made from? And how can we understand the world in terms of basically a very small number of basic building blocks and some quite simple rules that govern their behavior. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to come up with what is reality deep, deep down.
Cliff says there are two theoretical models that describe our world. There's the study of the infinitesimally small. That's the standard model of particle physics, which describes what atoms are made of. Then on the opposite end of the spectrum, there's the standard cosmological model, which describes the universe. Simply put, it's how stars and galaxies behave and how gravity works.
The problem is these two theories don't play well with each other. But basically, the evidence from astronomy is telling us that 95% of what is out there in the universe is invisible, mysterious stuff that we call dark matter and dark energy. And we have no idea as particle physicists what these things are. So we're in this really weird position of not knowing what 95% of the universe is made from. So we think that there must be more to these pictures than we've been able to fill in so far. And as a scientist, when you see something that doesn't fit your picture, that's the most exciting thing, because it's usually the thing that doesn't fit that is the clue to the next big breakthrough in our understanding.
One example of a scientific anomaly that led to a huge discovery takes us back to the 1960s. It all started when two American radio astronomers named Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson built a huge radio antenna in a suburb in New Jersey.
So you imagine this thing, it looks like a big funnel, basically, a big metal funnel. It's on a rotating turntable. But what it was essentially a radio telescope. So it's a way of looking at the sky and studying it in radio waves. And they were planning to do radio astronomy of the Milky Way and distant stars and various other objects. But when they were turning their radio antenna on for the first time, they picked up this really irritating background buzz, this kind of microwave noise, effectively, in their instrument. It's a bit like turning the radio on and there's this nasty crackling static that's interfering with your piece of music. And they're like, oh, okay, we're not going to be able to do any observations because of this noise.
Penzias and Wilson spent a year trying to figure out what was causing it. It was a chance conversation that one of them had at a nearby university where another physicist said, "I think this strange anomaly, this noise you've picked up in your radio antenna, is actually the echo of the Big Bang."
In the 60s, there was still a big debate about the origins of the universe. There was this theory known as the Big Bang Theory, that the universe began with this as a sort of very, very small, hot, dense state that expanded rapidly to give birth to the universe as we know it. But there was another view, which was the steady state theory, which is that the universe had always been here and has been expanding forever. And basically new stuff kind of appears and fills in the gaps. So the universe is eternal and doesn't change. And this signal that they'd picked up was actually the light from the fireball that filled the universe 13.8 billion years ago, and over the intervening period of time had been stretched from a short wavelength hot white light to a very cold microwave noise, essentially. And this discovery settled the argument, it ended the debate, and we now accept that the Big Bang really happened.
Cliff believes this is the most profound discovery in the history of science. Namely, that the universe began with the Big Bang.
And that came from this paying attention to this funny noise in a scientific instrument. And that is the power of anomalies. So anomalies sometimes, and a lot of the time, most of the time actually, they are mundane. Usually it's pigeon poo. That's the explanation. But every so often, it's not pigeon poo. It's something really profound, like the discovery of the light from the Big Bang. So that's why these anomalies are so interesting to study, because they every so often are this little gateway, this little doorway to a new way of looking at nature.
One of the anomalies that puzzles astronomers today, which also ties back to the Big Bang theory, is the rate at which the universe is expanding. In the 1960s, cosmologists assumed that after the Big Bang, gravity would cause the expansion of the universe to slow down. But in the 1990s, researchers discovered that rather than slowing down, the expansion of the universe is accelerating. Here's how they measure that rate.
And there are basically two ways of doing this. One is you look at objects in the night sky like galaxies. You use very clever techniques to figure out how far away they are and how fast they're moving, and that allows you to measure the expansion rate of the universe. The other way, though, is you can look at this light from the Big Bang, so this noise that Penzias and Wilson discovered in 1964, and by analyzing the patterns in that light, you can work out what the universe was like very early on, so in the first, 400,000 years of the universe's history, and then you can use our theory of cosmology to run the clock forward to today and predict how fast the universe should be expanding.
But it turns out that the prediction and the measurement don't agree by quite a lot. Cliff says this irregularity suggests there's something big missing from our theory of the universe.
What this is, we do not know yet, but it could be, assuming this is a real effect, it could be some new kind of force in the universe that has shaped it through its history. It could be that this other stuff that we know is out there called dark matter. Perhaps dark matter is much more complicated than we imagined, that it's able to interact with itself, do all kinds of interesting things. It could even be that our theory of gravity is wrong. So it's potentially quite a big deal. This anomaly is still debated, but if it's real, it could be the clue that we're missing something pretty big in our understanding of the universe and its history.
You might be wondering at this point, why is any of this important? What difference does it make in the grand scheme of things?
If you ask scientists why they do this, particularly particle physicists and cosmologists, the reason is it's basic curiosity. So it's this, human beings want to know about the world that we live in. And that's ultimately why we do this research. And that knowledge in itself, I think, has huge value, cultural value as well as scientific. I mean, I think understanding our place in the universe, where we've come from, that I think does have an impact on people's lives, how they think about their lives and, what their lives mean. So it has all these sort of knock-on effects. But more practically, there have been many, many, many real-world impacts from this kind of research.
One example is a particle physics experiment in the 1930s when the atom was first split using a particle accelerator.
In 1932, at the lab that I work in Cambridge, at the Cavendish Laboratory, Ernest Rutherford, who was a leading nuclear physicist, and his team split the atom for the first time. And this was reported all over the international press, and journalists got very excited and said, Professor Rutherford, could we be using the energy from the nucleus to sort of power our lives? And Rutherford said, nonsense, no, we're never going to get energy out of the nucleus. And then within a decade or so, you have the atom bomb, you have nuclear energy. So this fundamental research, often the impact of it is very hard to predict, but when it does come, it can be really transformative. Nuclear energy is one example. Another is, you know, the discovery of the electron, which is the first particle that we ever found. Again, the discoverer of the electron said, oh, this is just a scientific curiosity. This is a kind of end of the 19th century. It's never going to be any use to anyone. But you couldn't imagine the technology that we use today without understanding electrons.
American science fiction novelist Isaac Asimov said, "The most exciting phrase to hear in science, the one that triggers new discoveries, is not Eureka, but that's funny." Harry Cliff's book, Space Oddities, The Mysterious Anomalies Challenging Our Understanding of the Universe, is available now online and in select bookstores. To find out more about our guests this week, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes and to support our show, follow Viewpoints Radio on Instagram, X, and Facebook. This segment was written and produced by Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
What's wrong?
My travel rewards card didn't earn enough miles for my vacation.
Are you crying? Are you crying because of that other credit card?
Uh-huh.
Well, switch to the Capital One Venture card. Venture lets you redeem miles on any travel purchase.
Really?
Yep, and you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every single day. The Capital One Venture card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Why are certain providers and medical doctors not listening to family members who have lived through a disease path for such a long time?
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Go back a decade and frozen yogurt chains were popping up left and right. People couldn't get enough of the self-serve setup, low-fat options, and countless toppings. Chains like Forever Yogurt, Menchie's, Red Mango, and more all seemed to be capitalizing on the craze. But in recent years, many of these fro-yo locations have shuttered. What happened? Many industry experts say that the fro-yo bubble simply popped. What was once a staple in the dessert lineup has now been overshadowed by the next sweet treat trend. Right now, this is cookies. Americans can't seem to get enough of fresh baked cookies that are massive in size and come in a variety of enticing flavors. Some foodies credit Levin Bakery in New York as a catalyst for this trend. The Manhattan-based bakery started in 1995 and had a strong neighborhood following for decades. However, it didn't reach national popularity until 3 or 4 years ago. Today, another cookie chain, Crumble, is pushing out the same big cookie concept, but it's more known for its long list of inventive flavors. In 2022, the CEO of Shake Shack invested $10 million into the relatively new cookie startup Chip City, which also began in New York. Today, the chain has almost 40 locations across the country. While this is impressive growth, the consumers and experts are already saying it's only a matter of time until cookies are out and something new is in. We're crossing our fingers that cupcakes make a comeback. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. She's won 9 Grammys and 2 Academy Awards by age 22, so it's not exactly earth-shattering news that Billie Eilish is a mega-talented superstar. But I think her new album, called Hit Me Hard and Soft, marks a new peak for Eilish, which is really saying something. The album, with just 10 tracks but a 43-minute runtime, defies the expectation of what a pop album is in 2024. The industry trends would say that it's more profitable to release a streaming-friendly 22-song album that has two-minute songs and choruses perfect for TikTok. But it seems Eilish and her producer-slash-brother Finneas aren't concerned with following those pop trends. Instead, they gave us a moody, dynamic, cohesive album that really takes its shape when you step back and view it as one piece. The lyrics are some of the most intimate of Eilish's career, exploring her sexuality, her relationship with fame, a disappointing breakup, and much more, while Finneas's production is once again immaculate. My favorite moment on the album, or maybe in the entire year in music, is the final 30 seconds of Bittersweet into the album's closer, Blue. During Bittersweet, Finneas teases the melody of a beloved early song Eilish used to perform live called True Blue that never got an official studio release. Then the song changes, and Eilish's ethereal vocals take over, delivering the familiar sounds of True Blue to fans who've waited years to hear it in studio quality. And it's astonishing. Her constant control and maturing vocals combine to break the listener's heart before the song veers left, then right, defying your expectations the whole way. Through just two albums, Billie Eilish's career was already a fairy tale, but her third album might just be her best work to date. Hit Me Hard and Soft by Billie Eilish is now available. I'm Evan Rook.
Spilled your drink? Quick, the quicker picker-upper. Bounty picks up spills quicker. And each sheet is 2 times more absorbent, so you can use less than the leading ordinary brand. So, you can get back to your night. Bounty, the quicker picker-upper.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Certainly, we all want to see suicide prevention, and I'm certain that it does work to a degree. It's when I hear that all suicides are preventable that it makes me bristle, because they are not.
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Shel Lustig.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, meet the woman who's closing the gender gap in research.
There is just a massive gap in the data when it comes to, I would say, fairly basic women's health issues or even fairly basic female biology.
But first, why don't more cancer patients participate in research trials?
5 or 7% of people who could participate in trials actually do. Too many patients go to their grave never having known that they could.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralask brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
Building AI systems is like having kids. You want your kids to be smarter than you are. You want your kids to be more successful than you are. And at the end of the day, you want your kids not to kill you.
Viewpoints Radio Podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
Growing up, Brittany Powell spent her free time on the basketball court. Whether she was perfecting her shooting form or spending all weekend at a tournament, basketball was her sole focus. When she started having tingling and numbness in her arms, the doctors dismissed it as growing pains. But as the symptoms persisted, Powell wondered if it was truly being caused by a growth spurt.
And then out of nowhere, my right arm stopped working. Like, I couldn't use it, and I was heavily using my left hand. So yeah, we had to get several x-rays done. They couldn't find anything wrong. They misdiagnosed me with scoliosis. But then I started losing function in the lower half of my body. And so now I wasn't able to walk. I was unable to stand. I couldn't really move.
At 12 years old, Powell underwent months of blood tests, x-rays, and MRIs before doctors finally found a mass on her spinal cord. Though it was only the size of a thumbnail, it had caused nerve damage in her arms and legs.
I had six set of spinal surgeries, and they were going from the front and the back, and the tumor would grow back each time more aggressively. And I even went through chemotherapy, and the tumor grew back as well.
All six surgeries were in the span of a year. After the chemotherapy hadn't worked, Powell was just 13 years old when doctors gave her a death date.
The doctors stated that I only had 3 months to live because the tumor growth was so aggressive and the rate in which it was growing was just too much. And the fact that I was losing mobility in my arms and my legs was very significant.
Fortunately, Powell's parents refused to accept the diagnosis. Her mom immediately began researching clinical trials that Powell would be a good fit for.
If there's one thing about that lady, she does not take no for an answer. So you tell her something and she will disapprove real quick. And she found several support groups, several cancer support groups online, and they were having this extreme success rate with this clinical trial called denosumab.
They reached out to the scientists to see if Powell could get into the clinical trial. But while she was physically a good candidate, the required monthly trips to receive the medication was a huge financial hurdle.
At this time, my mom is out of work. She's been out of work for about a year. She was my main provider, and we had a home that was going underwater. Like, we're in the process of losing our home and our livelihood of what we know. Like, my mom's a single parent, so it was really, really hard.
But with Powell's life hanging in the balance, they couldn't turn down this opportunity. Luckily, the researchers referred them to Lazarex Cancer Foundation. It's a nonprofit that helps increase access to clinical trials for cancer patients. Dana Dornseif is the founder and chief mission and strategy officer for the foundation. She says Lazarex was created from her personal experience of hunting for cancer trials.
My youngest sister's husband, Mike, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was given a 0.5% chance of survival. So we knew that he wouldn't get different results if he did the same thing that other pancreatic cancer patients were doing. And so they asked me to look into clinical trials. And I thought, well, how hard could that be?
Turns out it's extremely difficult. 5 weeks later, Dornseif emerged with a few options that her brother-in-law may have qualified for and a heavy frustration for the convoluted process. Clinicaltrials.gov has information for ongoing studies around the world. But Dornseif says decoding the medical jargon was almost impossible.
It's the way the information is not available, you know, not presented in lay terms. And all clinical trials are registered on clinicaltrials.gov, but you also have to have a medical degree in order to be able to read through the protocols. I'd read three sentences and look up 10 words, and it was just crazy.
Mike ended up finding a trial that helped extend his life. But Dornseif realized that was only because he had a support system who dedicated endless time and resources to get there. Not many cancer patients can say they have the same. This sparked a fire in her to create Lazarex, which takes so much of the burden off the patient, including clinical trial navigation.
Chances are that your oncologist or the office where you're being seen is not involved in clinical trials. So they're not going to talk about clinical trials to their patients, because if they do, then they become responsible So we encourage the medical community to refer patients to us. We'll do the heavy lifting. They can call us, and our team who is trained will do all of that for them. They interview the patient. They take into consideration what their diagnosis is, their treatment history, their physical capacity to travel, because usually clinical trials are not in your backyard.
And some patients need a travel companion or have young kids that need to be taken care of, factors that are often huge obstacles.
If you're faced with having to travel to get to a clinical trial and making a commitment for the next 12 months that you're going to travel to a clinical trial site two or three times a month at a cost of $400 or $500 potentially per month that you don't have, you're not going to go. And you start making decisions around what is best for my family, and do I want to spend what little I have left, if any, on a chance that this trial may help me, or do I want to put my family in a better financial position by not going?
Which is partly why cancer trial participation is so low. In fact, recent research in the journal Cancer estimates that only 2 to 8% of cancer patients enroll. A 2019 study in the Journal of Clinical Oncology reveals that nearly half of cancer trials aren't able to find enough participants to complete the research. This leads to small sample sizes that can't provide valid results.
Too many patients go to their grave never having known that they could participate. And so that's where you see cumulatively all of these things leading to 5 or 7% of people who could participate in trials actually do. And of that 5 or 7%, only a very small percentage come from our communities of color. That creates a scientific problem for the development of drugs that work for everyone in our community, right? That's why we're so focused on improving not just enrollment, but diversity of clinical trial participants.
But the burden can't be fully shouldered by the patients and their families. Dornsife says there's a lot that can be done on the research side to improve the process.
There's a disconnect with researchers, right? They think, oh no, we just do research. We don't support patients. Well, the thing is that if you are doing research and you're developing a investigational agent that's going to become part of a clinical trial, you need patients. And that drug is going to go nowhere if you don't have adequate enrollment, right? And so we need to reformulate how we think and include patient support as part of that research process. Because ultimately, if a new drug or a new treatment doesn't get to patients, what's the point?
Dornsife thinks that a successful trial needs the patient perspective at many more parts in the process than just being the guinea pigs. Last year, we reported on Lupus ABC, a public-private partnership with the FDA that brought together patients and researchers to advance treatment together. This type of collaboration may be just what cancer trial research needs. Dornsife says that listening to patients could help scientists understand what drugs will be effective. For example, many patients aren't eligible to participate because they have a secondary condition like heart disease.
It makes sense to a certain degree because as a researcher, you want the cream of the crop because you want your drug to work, right? And you want to get approval and get to market. But unfortunately, that's not how the real world works.
A recent paper published in Cancer Research estimates that one-third of all cancer patients have at least one comorbidity. That number can increase depending on the specific cancer diagnosis. So broadening the scope of accepted patients would help figure out how these drugs interact with other health issues, as well as increase participation rates. However, the financial burden still remains a main obstacle. Lazarex and similar organizations do their best to fill the gap, but without any efforts from the research side to increase accessibility, there may always be too many patients without the means to travel and participate in life-saving trials.
In October, we had to put a hold on accepting new applications because we were literally spending twice what we had budgeted, which was substantial. We had budgeted almost $2.5 million a year for just reimbursement, and we were almost doubling that. So I just need people to understand that we are here to help, but we can only help if we have dollars to do it with. And we are a public charity. We are completely dependent on donations to our organization. We have very, very low overhead, 10%. And we have a benefactor who covers almost all, if not all, of our facilities and administration. So literally every dollar someone gives to us goes to help a patient.
For Powell, this support got her treatment that not only kept her alive past her doctor's 3-month estimate, but actually improved her health.
I started gaining weight properly. I was holding down food. I wasn't as nauseous. I was in a brace at the time. So I had a brace that was from the middle of my abdomen all the way up to my neck just to hold my spine stable. And that was around the time I was able to get out of my brace that I'd been in for like a year or so.
After a year of surgeries, chemotherapy, and being given a deadline on life, Powell was finally cancer-free.
It was just one of those things where it was a miracle. And I remember being cancer-free in late summer, and me and my family basically threw a mini party in my house, and we just kind of like just had a day of just being like thankful and just enjoying each other's company and like thanking God for allowing us to be here.
You can find more information about Lazarex, Brittany Powell, Dana Dornseif, and all of our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, why menstrual blood is much more useful than we thought, when Radio Health Journal returns.
Did you know that feeling sluggish or weighed down could be a sign that your digestive system isn't working at its best? Taking Metamucil every day can help. Metamucil fiber powders help promote your daily digestive health using a plant-based fiber called psyllium. The gelling action of this special fiber traps and removes waste so you can feel lighter and more energetic. Metamucil, promoting digestive health for a better you. Learn more at Metamucil.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You're gonna feel a puff of air.
Zhong's optometry has set their sights on staffing up.
Try the next line. Hey, Kim, can you tell our 2 o'clock we're running 15 behind? Sorry, we're a bit backed up today.
He needs an optometric technician to keep an eye on it all.
Where are the dilation drops?
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your